now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to The Ruck. And we have a baby in the studio. This is something for first, and we're going to see how it catches on. But Alex Lowe dropped out late this morning. He's not feeling well, so we got a better replacement. And this is Ella Peters, who is how old, Sam?
She's 6 months old.
Six months. We're going to turn to her for some views on the new breakdown rules later on. I'm Owen Slott, and yes, I'm back from Montpellier. Last great trip. Thank you very much. No Steve Jones today. I think we can say he's stuck in Datchet, which is generally what we say when he's not here. Sounds like a euphemism, but I understand that emotionally he's unable to podcast when Harry Kane has a hamstring issue. That is Ella. Ella, we'll get on to you in a minute. Steve's also very stroppy that Don Armand, the latest love of his life, has been cold-shouldered by Eddie Jones. So we'll talk about that a bit as well. So in his absence, we have today a debut from Sam Peters and his daughter. Sam, great to have you here. Sam is new to the Sunday Times, formerly of the Mail on Sunday. Sam has been a rugby writer for a number of years, but more and better than anyone else, he's written about concussion. When he started writing about concussion, it seemed like he was banging a drum that everyone wanted him to pipe down on a bit. Be fair to say that, Sam?
I didn't ever pick that up at all, though. Not at all.
Well,
no.
Anyway, we are now all firmly on the bandwagon, so congratulations on that. You have definitely led that, and that is a very, very important part of our work now. So great to have you here, Sam. And also today we have our first ever podcast contributor who has his name on a banknote. Ben, what banknote is it?
It's $7 piece, $7 note, and the 50 cent coin. Yeah. So those two.
Congratulations! I'm going to get one done soon. As well, Sam, any plans for to be on a banknote?
No, but do you have one in your in your house? You must have framed banknotes.
I don't have anything of any rugby memorabilia in the house. One of those. Yeah, I find that a little bit awkward when you go in someone else's house and they have all that sort of stuff around. It's not even in the toilet. But I do have a wad of them that the Reserve Bank of Fiji gave me. That's pretty sizable. That
What's the biggest current currency that you're on?
$7, which is about £2.50.
Right. Yeah. So in Fiji, you could buy.
You get a coffee with that. $7, you get three coffees probably. It's nice. It's nice actually buying something with your face on. You know, you're using a bill with your face on is quite
yeah,
fun.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It gets a bit boring after a while.
So yeah. Yeah, that's what Fiji's crazy about rugby. So, you know, there's all sorts of things that have happened since the Olympics that they've made sure that they're not going to forget that win for a long time, I think.
So okay. How many of those, what's a Fiji player going to get paid for per match?
Per match, they won't get anything per match or even... And the
it's
boys,
just for the tour, is
the
it?
The boys in the tour will get... Last time it was 200 Fijian a day, so 65 quid a day.
Right, okay.
And then their win bonuses, maybe they might get a match appearance of 1,000, which would be about 300 quid. So, yeah, I mean...
35 Ben Ryan notes.
Yeah, 35 of those. I mean, I don't think that... Yeah, they probably want some hard cash, US dollars probably. But no, they're there. I mean, their match fees, I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Mm. But for the Pacific boys, it's on a completely different level. A lot of those guys will lose money probably by not playing for their clubs over that November internationals, but they'll do it for the love of the game and wanting to play for Fiji and... It's a pretty decent side now.
My introduction though was painfully woeful. Here we are talking about Ben on the face of a bill, and we haven't even said exactly who he is. If you haven't worked it out, Ben Ryan's joined us in the podcast today. This is Ben, who was the coach of the Fiji men's 17 that won the Olympic gold medal, one of the best days of the Olympics as far as I was concerned, and probably for you as well, it'd be fair to say.
No, it'd be fair.
A wonderful day that was. Outstanding to see a great team just show why they are great. That's what one of the reasons I loved it so much that day. Talked about, everyone knew what they could do, and they went out and they delivered it.
Yeah, I didn't, and probably on the touchline, hand on heart, really, I wasn't in the top 10 moments of, you know, tournaments where you're feeling nervous. A fate I'm not necessarily aligned to, but I do think there was a, you know, we were so well prepared and so competent that it didn't really matter what anyone else did. The boys were going to be good enough, and you know, and some of those guys are doing amazing things at the moment, and Josh Tuasova for Toulon, and of course the human lamppost Leone Nakarawa, who really shouldn't be playing sevens at 120 kilograms plus, but plays on his own time zone and does things just magnificently. So we've got those sort of guys, and an emerging superstar in Semi Kunatani, who Toulouse chucked on the wing for no apparent reason and now have actually put him in the back row where he can do his thing, and getting himself into the first team now. He's going to be a real star, not just for Toulouse, but I'm sure will be. He's just been named in the Fijian team for the November internationals as well, so watch out whoever's playing against him.
We're going to talk at length about Fiji, but the, one of the questions, that, since we got onto the sort of talent that you're talking about already, do you think if Fiji could ever assemble their first 15, and I'm talking about taking back players like the Kiridjanis or the Karevis or Nathan Hughes from England or whatever, is that a World Cup winning team?
I guess you've got to look at front five, haven't you, and see what depth they've got there, because we've got some world-class locks floating around that are currently in the side and also in other teams. It'd be front row, I suppose.
Front rows is always where Fiji haven't really had, isn't it?
Yeah, but the last World Cup, we scrummaged pretty well against Australia and England, and you know they've invested a lot of time, and World Rugby have also, you know, seen that as a target and brought in coaches that have done really good job on the islands. Certainly, I mean, crikey, the other position really where we would say we're lacking world class is at fly half. What happens generally, all the really talented boys that go from Fiji overseas to play professional rugby, they never get put in a position on that spine, you know, especially the backs nine or 10. If they're a 10 or a 9 naturally, Matawalu went to Glasgow, you just chuck him on the wing. We've had a number of players that have come in as 10s that have gone into fullback or wing in the lower divisions in France. So they don't get that experience and they don't get that playmaker role. And we haven't had anyone since Nicky Little in Fiji that has steered the ship effectively. Ben Volavola is the current incumbent that's playing a bit of super rugby. But really no one of real class. It's one or two floating around now. The fly half in the sevens world Olympic team was outstanding, and he's hopefully going to get a contract overseas, but got to play him at 10, and that's the area, you know, there's a lot of fly halves floating around, but they're not playing fly half, and so you can't expect them to go straight into international rugby and do their bit. Plus, you know, you need to have them like Argentina, and you know their homegrown players are now playing locally and playing Super Rugby. Fiji need that as well, because it's not just about the talent. You do need time together to gel them, and until you have a professional team on the islands, you know, when really realistically they're not going to be consistent quarterfinalists or better in World Cups.
So you think that's the limit? The way things stand, there's always a ceiling that they can't punch through.
That's exactly right. You know, they're both in terms of resource. You know, they haven't got the money, and when we do get the money, it's not always spent in the best way. And they haven't got time with players. You know, that the regulations will release players for big tournaments and for test match windows, but the very minimum. You know, so they'll get them on the very first day. Whereas England, with the EPS agreement, and everything else, they've managed to get their players at different times. So, you know, they're off to Portugal today, and Fiji just don't get that. They get the minimum. So you see in World Cups, they'll get better and better as the World Cup goes on, because they've had more time together, whereas other teams are perhaps doing the opposite. Fiji are getting better. And if there was a Super Rugby franchise, they would kill it. And they've just been in this Australian competition where they're going into the knockout rounds now, and they've had a few up and down results, but ultimately they've gone really well with a fairly scratched side. and it shows the promise of having a Pacific, and you can have a Pacific Island 15 to start with in the Super Rugby, with academies in Samoa and Tonga. And unfortunately, that was on the cards, and I had even gone to the point of meeting Super Rugby.
Well, I remember this time a year ago, you were really on that one, weren't
you? Had backers that, you know, had serious money that we had verified through escrow accounts and stuff like that, and then went to Super Rugby, and they gave me the you know, said, "Yep, we'll take a proposal," and all that was happening, and then Fiji Rugby Union just told me to leave it alone. Told
serious?
Me to
step back.
Just said, like, you're no longer part of the Fiji Rugby Union, so it's no longer your business. And I thought at the time, with all the other things going on, I'll do that and step back.
Sam, that would have been one of the all-time game breakers, wouldn't it, if that had got over the line?
It would have been phenomenal. I mean, that's just such a shame. I think so many people look at the island nations and realise the just natural resources that are there is just astonishing. You only have to cast your eye around European professional rugby now to see just how many islanders are playing over here, earning a living over here, and also how much the clubs are sort of proactively going out there to see these guys. I know it's probably cliche to say that there's so many natural athletes out there that have phenomenal skills. I mean, if you could pull that all together, and it's sort of so frustrating because we hear it year after year after year. You know, they come over, we hear the stories, there'll be stories again, and there already have been, about how little money these guys will earn when they're here. And if you just gave them a level playing field in every sense, anybody who's watched rugby for any amount of time knows that they have got the talent within those islands. They already massively punch above their weight around the world of rugby, talking about rugby league before as well, but union. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a huge amount of goodwill, but goodwill only gets you so far, doesn't it? So,
and we'll get these blips. You get a bit more press in November internationals when Samoa play England or... Fiji have got a test match against one of the tier ones, and then it disappears again. Then it goes again at World Cups, and really nothing genuine has happened. We've had changed the eligibility rules, which is great, as far as Fiji will hold a few boys that will play test match rugby for Fiji, but it's still not solving the ultimate problem, which is we need a professional team in Fiji, the union needs to do a fair bit itself as well to try to drive standards, because you know, they can't look at the rest of the world and say it's everyone else's fault. There's lots of stuff that's gone on in the union that you would shake your head at.
One of the most frustrating things to hear from me, and I just think it's completely unacceptable to hear that guys are going to have to play for the love of the country. And, you know, as lovely and romantic a notion as that is, it's just not good enough in a professional sport. And, you know, what is going to be done to prevent this from happening, where players aren't going to have to take pay cuts to come and actually, you know, I'm shouting a little bit, but you know, are World Rugby going to step in here? How is there a solution, Ben, to mean that guys don't leave their clubs and don't end up having to do it for the love of the jersey?
World Rugby have just prodded around at the edges of this for years.
Yeah.
As you say, every year the Islanders come over for some Tier 1 test matches in November and don't get a chance to prepare properly. It's just minimal measures that aren't making any impact.
Having been on the ground there for 3 years, I know World Rugby are doing some very positive stuff. I know that they must find it very hard at times, having to have worked with the Fiji Rugby Union. And I'm sure that same goes for the other unions in the Pacific that have had all sorts of problems. And they've
a lot of political involvement in there.
Yeah. I mean, look, Frank, who's PM, is in charge. But you know, and his son-in-law is the chairman. On public, you know, it's public that he was convicted of manslaughter, and you know, and that's the guy that's chairman of the union.
Mm. So that was your boss.
He's my boss. Yeah, he kicked and punched someone to death at a wedding. So it's, you know, there's a few things at home that we need to sort out first. And World Rugby, I guess that's their priority. England missed a massive PR, and they've still got the opportunity to do it in November with Samoa, when England played Fiji at Twickenham and they made millions and millions. And I think Fiji got $100,000 from Twickenham.
That was a goodwill payment, wasn't it?
They could have given them a million, and that would have been more PR than the £1 million. And I was at the RFU, you know, when post 2011 World Cup, where things went south pretty quickly, and they did lots of reports, and a lot of it was around, well, we're not very liked in by England by other nations, and perceived as being arrogant, perceived as being self-serving, and here's an opportunity to turn that round immediately. They didn't do it with Fiji. They could do it with Samoa. They won't, because they don't have to, and they'll argue that, you know, until there's sort of an edict from World Rugby, then they're not going to do it. But it would make a big difference, you know, and you know, these are the main players in the world game. England and New Zealand, really, they control so much.
Well, I expect them to make another goodwill payment, because they've sort of set a precedent. But
it's 100, you know, 50, 100k.
It's,
you know,
just it's not even a dent, is it?
Part of the issue here, that if that money is given, you know, the transparency, where's the accountability? Where does the money actually go?
Yeah, but what World Rugby do is they set up for high performance unions, and they've set up a separate account, right, bank account, so it would go in there, and then you'll have to have a secondary signatory from World Rugby, so that money won't disappear.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I remember once I tried to get some money in from someone that put it into the union in my first year, and it took me a couple of weeks to find it, because there were 156 bank accounts or something, wow, that the FIU had. But World Rugby have got a way around that. And so, yeah, you could trace the money. It's not gonna disappear if you do it in the right manner. If you gave the money to World Rugby to then deal out to the union, it would, yeah, it'd be.
Ben, is there any part of you that so since you finished the sevens, you left Fiji after the Olympics, and you've done lots of go through what work you're doing presently in a minute, but. You've done lots of things since then, and you've resisted the 15s game.
Yep.
Is there any part of you that would see that Fiji 15 aside as one of the great challenges?
Yeah.
If you could do something with it, I mean, it would be, you know, everyone so loved Fiji do it in the sevens in the Olympics, but to put together a proper team that could challenge at world level at a World Cup or something. We've already talked about the reasons why it's next to impossible,
yeah,
but would that be one of the great challenges?
100%, you know, and I think perhaps if I'd stayed and done some work with John, then it might have led to that. And yeah, I think if there was a challenge in 15s, it would be the Fiji 15s team, but you can't just have a team that assembles on the Monday and then plays on the Friday, or, you know, as happened in the last November games when they played, I think, the Barbarians in Ravenhill, and, you know, some of the boys had played the previous weekend or even the Monday night, and it's just not workable. So you need some sort of runway so that you've got a chance. But yeah, I think, I mean, a Super Rugby franchise based on the islands would be probably my dream job, if I'm honest. Yeah, that would be the dream one, and then from there lead on to then doing something with the Fijian team. You need more top table teams in 15s. You know, it's gone back to, in my opinion, you know, only three or four teams capable of winning a World Cup, and we haven't progressed, you know. And you look at the American team, talked about them for decades, moving on from since 87, they've not done that. Neither have Canada, and some of these other nations are the same. I looked at the Romanian team recently. They've got six or seven islanders now in that Romanian national side. Yeah, so we need to get an island.
You say it's gone back to that. Was there a time when it was more than that?
Well, there was a time where we really felt like there might be an explosion as far as three or four more sides join the, you know, and they've had their moments, whether it's different teams at different points have sort of got close and not held on there, and then have dropped back again. And you know, it's not like sevens where you've got legitimately a dozen sides that could win a tournament. And it makes it fascinating, the game, you know, not particularly healthy for a lot of the coaches, but for the teams and for the spectators, it's great. 15s have that, it would be amazing.
People from outside of rugby, I think, reasonably bash the sport. I mean, rugby league, we're watching a World Cup going on at the moment, they've got even a bigger problem there, because there's really two, possibly three teams that could win that tournament. In union, you could possibly stretch it to five, maybe six, but to really build a World Cup, you've got to have 10, 12, 14 teams.
No, I agree. I think it's... I try, when you said it's gone backwards, I think, well, who was further forward? Well, the Canadians at once. In 91, Canada had a good team. Argentina have punched well on some World Cups, and at the moment it doesn't seem that they will do, but it's hard to trace where their development is going at the moment.
South Africa have gone backwards at a pretty rapid rate.
Yeah.
As have USA. If you think about it, you know, we always thought that, and you know, their sevens team are the ones really that are pushing on, whereas their 15s have just gone backwards. So yeah, you just love to have more and more fighting it out, but you know, you and we could all tell you who the quarter finalists would be for next World Cup in Japan, and would be 95% correct probably right now. Now, you know, you can't do that in football for the World Cup. There's no way you'd be able to guess correctly the last 16 or the last 8 to that level of assuredness. So it's a bigger story, but certainly if the Pacific were given more opportunity and more Tier 1 test matches as well, then we'd have far more chance for them to be regularly quarterfinalists, because, you know, it's a tough ask at the moment.
Is that pipe dream of yours to run a Super Rugby franchise? Maybe I'm becoming a bit obsessed by it, but I just love the idea so much. Yeah. Is there anything left in it, or is that...
No, I think if anything, I mean, my conversations with Super Rugby were, look, firstly, you know, they were pretty annoyed that there was all sorts of stuff this time last year about it and they didn't know about it. And I had done that on purpose. I wanted to get in front of them, and I thought the best way to do that was to throw some stories into the media that had some legs, and that got me to a meeting in Sydney. And then, you know, they were a little bit frustrated that this story was coming out, and they were having internal disputes about what's happening with Australia. They're going to be one less franchise. South Africa competition not quite working, too much travel, convoluted tournament format. So they sort of said, let's get our house in order first, and then we can introduce a Super Rugby franchise 2022-2021 around there. It's like, okay, that gives plenty of time for the new stadium that was going to get built on the west of the island and all these various things. And then obviously the carpet got taken away from the FIU, but there's now been more clamour again. You know, the New Zealand press in particular and the Australian press are trying to push for a Pacific Island team. So you never know. Super Rugby may well push hard, and the one thing that Fiji could do is just government funding. They could just go, well, we'll fund it. You know, they put 10 million, so that 3.5-4 million a year into just funding a single golf tournament in Fiji, the Fijian Open. So they potentially could do that as well in the first few years before you get sponsors. So it's all possible.
Sam, you'd be happy to cover that, wouldn't you?
I think you could twist my arm to go out and do a bit of
You're very much the man.
Just on the sort of governance of that, how that might work, Ben, but would it inevitably be the Fijian Rugby Union as the sort of dominant power that would run it?
No, Super Rugby had said to me about that. It doesn't have to be.
Right.
No, it can be a franchise. And you'd definitely get World Rugby on board. I mean, the one thing to add any sort of gravitas to it all is have them inside the camp as early as possible. It helps on so many different levels. And, you know, FIU, all they have to do is allow the games to be played on Fijian soil or Pacific Island soil, you know, wherever it is, and same for Samoa and Tonga. So that would happen, you know, because the nations want it. I mean, the slight issue is that NRL are already seeing this as well, and they want a club in Fiji. And they're really pushing hard on the islands. Their recruitment's hard.
Really?
They're going to start to play games there. And you could have a stadium in Fiji before you have, for Union, you have an NRL side. And I think Fiji Rugby League will get quite deep into this tournament as well. And they will. That will also open up a more opportunity. And League will come in through that back door when it's open there for Union to do something.
What an opportunity that would be missed.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. You know.
People have been banging on about this for so long as well, you know, that Fiji and Pacific Islands need that support, and it would, you know, be a terrible shame if League did move in on that space, because, you know, money drives a lot of things in life, and you can't blame people for, if they've, you know, you've got a family to support and rugby's your option. If it's League or Union, if someone's offering you a big contract, why wouldn't you say yes if you've got a family to support?
Ben, Fiji's first first game in the, they've got Italy and Ireland this autumn. That Italian game is presumably one they could target, or are they all just literally going, as you say, come together after playing over the weekend before for their clubs?
Yeah, they will. They'll come together whenever World Rugby allow that window to start. You know, they they beat Italy in Fiji in the summer, I think. Yeah, they did when they also no the, yeah they did and they beat Scotland as well, and those, and we started to build some momentum there. You would say at the moment on form Fiji would beat Italy, even if it's in Italy, and then go to Ireland and have a crack, but it will be all about opportunity of those, that personnel being put together, you know, and having a, having a bit of time together, and then again, you know, for me it's that, it's that fulcrum of 9, 10, 12, 8, 9, 10, 12, where we're not quite at world test match level yet, especially at halfback. Good guys coming through, some good youngsters, but they need, they can't jump from local rugby in Fiji to test match rugby against Ireland, and they can't go from on the bench half a dozen appearances at Super Rugby and then go and then steer the ship against a tier one side. Then we need a 10, we need a Nicky Little, and you know, we can't turn the clock back, but we need people of that calibre that can, and we need a couple of them. So unfortunately that's probably the November internationals where we might come a little bit unstuck.
How is Samoa going to do it? Twickenham, Sam, you got some ideas on the great new young Samoan players coming through?
You might have stumped me a little bit there, but thanks for that one, Owen. What's your take on that?
No, there's a good new generation on the way.
Well done.
For sure. But seriously, they'll face the issues that they always do, which is poor preparation, not much time together, and wondering which of their players they're actually going to be able to lay claim to, because, as we all know, some players don't quite make it because they're stuck with their clubs, because their clubs incentivise them to do so.
100%, you know, and often you've got a Pacific Islander behind a first-ranked player that might go away on Tier 1 duty for one of the big teams, and so his contract's incentivised for match fees. It doesn't have to be as... anything more than that, you know, they don't have to say you're staying when there's November internationals. You just incentivise, and their contract's heavily weighted for big starting match fees, and that means that, you know, for those 4 or 5 weeks away, they could be losing huge amounts of money. It's a big call for them, and we've seen like Napoloni Nalanga, that's etched out a great career in France, that's turned down numerous opportunities to play in for Fiji because of the finances and everything else.
That's Ella's view on Nalanga. November internationals are upon us. England declared their squad last Thursday. Sam, what was your view on the squad that Eddie Jones put together? Clearly, the sort of the headline elements to it were back row average age, not much more than your daughter. some young bucks there, no James Haskell. Mm. So slower evolution there. Steve Jones's best mate Don Armand not there. which I joking, but I agree with Steve. I'm surprised it isn't.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Armand's been absolutely outstanding for best part of 3 years now down at Exeter, and yes, it's a surprise not to see him in there. But Curry's an outstanding young player. You know, I've got to agree with... I feel sad for Haskell in many ways because he's been a terrific servant for English rugby, but I do worry that this foot injury is a real problem for him. I can't remember hearing him come off the pitch and say that he hasn't got a problem with that foot, pain in that foot, which is going to be with him for the rest of his career. But, look, it's an interesting autumn in a way because you'd expect England to win all those three games. I know... Australia were terrific in the last game against the All Blacks, but they're coming down up here with, you know, without all their top guns for sure. And you would expect England to win all three tests. I mean, in many ways, the Wales series of games looks a bit more interesting in talking about developing nations coming through. Obviously, they've got Georgia at home as well, which will be good to see, and the All Blacks at the end, and South Africa and Australia. So in some ways, you look at those games and think, with Gatland going back to Wales, arguably that series is more interesting than England's.
That's almost like a clever link, isn't it? Because Ben, you work for Wales, or you sort of work for Wales. Mm. You have a number of consultancies at the moment, don't you? And yeah, with the WRU is one of them.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I haven't done much work with them at the moment, and work for the French Federation with their sevens teams and then various other governing bodies, and do various things, and ambassador for HSBC, and work with different organisations around culture and environment, which has been fascinating. Takes me all around the world. I'm really fortunate. I get to see some amazing things that other sports are doing at a much better level than rugby, and then I also think there's lots of things that we do better than lots of other, and around around culture and environment. I think rugby can be pretty proud about a lot of the things that we do. That's probably across the board slightly better. But
what does rugby not do so well compared to the other sports and businesses you work with?
I think things around recovery. I think the performance analysis stuff that we do in rugby is very much editing and cutting and pasting. There's some stuff that's going on that's a little bit more proactive, but not to the level that they're doing in the NBA or the NFL, where they're looking for some, as Nate Silver will see, you know, the talk about the signal and the noise. You know, there's tons of noise that we get. You get analysis. It's about finding the signals, really important things that can change the game, can change the way you want to play. And I'm all about having a simple framework for everything you do. But actually what I'm seeing in some of these high-end, high-performing sporting teams is they're doing that as well. They have the money to have every gadget that you can want.
Which is what England have within rugby as well.
But you've got to keep it simple, you know, so that you don't have so many whistles and bells that you get lost in it all. And, you know, I think what lots of teams have been doing, they've found themselves in that position and then realised, hold on, we need to strip this down and keep it simple and only have the things that we find of huge benefit to us to get those golden nuggets of signals that lots of teams will too much going on. I think probably if you look at the top of the Premiership, Saracens probably do that better than everyone else and lots of different ways. Their culture is probably the best in the Premiership. You know, they have that installation day where they'll put their, which happens in every NFL team in the country, where they'll put their game plan together for the opposition on the Tuesday or whatever it is, and they'll thread that through with a very well played out story that all the players are then on the same sheet about. Because in professional sport, that golden word of alignment is what you need all the time, and probably Saracens have that better than anyone else. And I guess you could argue maybe the All Blacks do a little bit, although I'd probably just say they've got better players at the moment.
How could rugby improve recovery other than play less fewer games? I mean, it's sort of the ever ongoing conundrum, isn't it?
I mean, it's the power is with the... In America, it's different. You know, you literally get off a court and get on a plane and go somewhere else, and there's no choice in that. The players don't moan about it. They get really good at their recoveries. It's almost the number one thing they do in the NBA, better than anyone else, because of the amount of games. And to a lesser extent, obviously, it happens in baseball, but the injuries aren't as varied as basketball. In rugby, like sevens is different. We need more games. We need more tournaments because there's only the World Series, and we could do with a secondary tournament around that. But for 15s, you know, for me, there's so many things we can do within the game. I just also think it's appalling that we have a law book that has laws in that no one's bothered about. You know, and we're trying to spread the game. We're making it an accessible game to everyone. But you get in the law book and there's laws that aren't getting... Yeah. If those laws are getting ignored because they're making the game safer or more exciting, you can sort of perhaps turn a blind eye. But when they potentially increase injury, when someone's getting judo rolled, it doesn't matter how many hours in the gym they've done over proprioception. If your leg's trapped in a ruck with bodies on the floor and someone's judo rolling you with a 100-kilogram man rolling you over, your knee's only got one way to go and it's not the anatomically correct one and you're going to get injured. And because of all of that, you go backwards. Tackle technique's poor, in my opinion, as well at Premiership level at the moment, because they don't need to tackle well. They just need to whack someone hard and get them on the floor, often two men tackling, one going ball, one going low, and we can't have a game like that, because you're not going to want the next generation, you're not going to want parents to send their kids to play rugby. I'm watching like school kids playing at my old school, and I'm watching some of the collisions at breakdowns that you're turning away from, and they're 13, 14, and if I'm turning away from them and I'm pretty, you know, I've got a lot of experience in the game, then what are their mums and dads doing?
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just some last thoughts on the forthcoming November autumn internationals. Ben, we haven't really talked about England very much at all. Ben and Sam, what's your view on where England stand in the world at the moment? We've got the All Blacks, who England are avoiding meticulously, but is that gap closer? Or
it's such a shame, isn't it, that we haven't had anything to measure them? They haven't gone head to head yet. I think everyone would love to see that. I'd like to see by the end of November to see if England have managed to get their 10-12 axis right and decided upon it for World Cup, because in my opinion, I don't think that Ford Farrell is a World Cup winning 10-12. I see Farrell as a 10. I think we need more opportunity at 12. I love Slade, but I'm not sure whether he's going to get the game time. See what happens with Ben Teo and whether his November internationals, what happens with him.
Would you see Slade as a 12?
Potentially.
For me, that's one of the great untried options, because he's only a 10 or a 13 at Exeter. But if you can do both of those things, then you've got the ideal skill set for a 12 as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, a world-class 12 needs to be a decision-maker, a distributor and a game-breaker. So he needs to have the opportunity to make a break. He needs to distribute really well and he needs to make decisions. Now, Henry Slade can do all of those things. Farrell does it well at 12. I just think I'm not sure, and I'm, you know, George is a fine player. I'm not sure if he's a world-class 10 to win a World Cup, in my opinion.
Well, throw another D in there. It's his defence, which Slade is an excellent defender as well. I think he'd be an outstanding 12 for England, certainly.
There's a few. I mean, everyone had a crack at Stewart in the last World Cup, was saying he's messing around with that. He hasn't got it right. We still haven't got it. I haven't seen anything stabilised there yet. Now, you know,
it is stable, isn't it? I mean, Ford Farrell is Eddie Jones's go-to. I mean, he tinkered with it once on the Australia tour and changed his mind after 26 minutes,
I might have to rephrase that then. I don't think it's a. I don't think it's the one that will beat the All Blacks consistently, and that's effectively what he's got to be looking at.
Teo's a big loss. I think it would have been fascinating to see what he'd done if Teo had an exceptional line store and was a, you know, he looks like an international carrying 12, doesn't he? But
if he'd been fit, I think Jones would be playing Ford, Farrell, Teo. Yeah, I think I think in his head, that's his ultimate midfield at the moment.
And it's a shame that one of the best players I've ever coached is Henry Trinder, and he's now finally get fit and healthy, and he might have a late surge. Mm. He's playing very well.
Oh, I was at Bath yesterday. I mean, he only really had a chance to dazzle in the first 20 minutes, but every time he was on the ball, you just love to watch that guy.
He's a great player, you know, and you know, he's evasive, he's very quick, he's strong. Obviously, he lacks any test match experience, and he's got, again, a short runway if he's going to get in the test match team. But I just want him to be injury free for a season and see what he can do at Gloucester. Because he's a real talent, you know. He's in that generation. He was in Ben Young's, Courtney Laws's,
tremendous player.
Sharple's generation.
God forbid it doesn't go that way, but you know, Will Fraser was he could be a sort of three quarters equivalent to Will Fraser, who everyone knows if they can get 18-20 games out of him in a season, then he's going to be right up there in international class. But it's really good just to see him back at the moment. Read your match report, but you know, Jonathan Joseph's not the worst 13 as well, so England aren't
great as well.
Short of options. You've got Elliot Daly as well. It's just getting the combination right, as you say, and with Slade throwing into the mix there, they've got a lot of good footballers in that back line now in the midfield, which England haven't necessarily had for, you know, a decade or so. After the likes of Mike Catt and Greenwood, they've got guys who can put width on the ball
Yeah, England are coming good, aren't they, Ella?
Okay, I think that was Ella's finally contribute to the podcast. Thank you very much. I have to say, it has been absolutely wonderful watching Sam masterfully multitasking here, doing a podcast and being a parent at the same time. It's something that no one else should try. Ben, thank you very much for coming this afternoon. And Sam, great to see you, and we'll see you again.
Definitely.
Thank you for joining the Ruck back again next week.
She needs a nappy change.
Do you record that?
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.